ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
How much are you now kind of tracking the Rockets?
I don't give a damn about the Rockets.
That's Draymond Green. Prior to that, it was Joel Blank. I am Branham. It is Brian behind the glass. You know what day it is. It's a Taco Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I, of course, am the innovator, the creator, the whatever of Taco Tuesday. Rockets won another basketball game yesterday. Draymond Green says he's not concerned about the Rockets. He didn't give a darn about the Rockets. He probably should. They're only a half game back out of the play-in. The Rockets continue to play some good basketball. 9 in a row for the Houston Rockets. This is getting pretty fun if you're a Houston Rocket fan.
No doubt about it. I mean, when you watch this team play, and obviously that was the game you were supposed to win last night, whether Jabari played or not. But the fact of the matter is you just keep seeing positives that allow you to give them superlatives to say, hey, this with each passing game, this season is a win. Even if they don't make it to the play-in game, no matter where they finish, it was one thing to say, hey, they won 22 games a year ago. Just trying to win more than that would have been an accomplishment. But in year one of Ime Udoka, to do what they've already done, to be over 500 at this point in the season and be a half game out of the play-in game, I mean, that's massive props, all the kudos in the world to the entire squad.
I wanted this team to play high-stakes basketball, and I got off of that a few weeks ago because the Rockets started to struggle a little bit into the All-Star break, out of the All-Star break. What was it? There was like six games. Was it six games back out of the 10th spot? Six games out of the play, and I was like, there's no chance they're catching Golden State.
There's no chance they're catching the Lakers.
Yeah, they're getting to a bit of a funk. I was like, you know what? This just doesn't feel good. I don't think that they're going to get this like going in the right direction, like enough to where they could catch Golden State. And that's whenever I started to say, play for ping pong balls. What an idiot I am. Who came up with that stupid idea? I did. But they've turned it around. They're playing at a high level. They're winning every game they play, it seems like. Jalen Green's playing really well. Complimentary basketball. They're connected. They're playing at a high level. This is great. This is high. Even if you don't get into the play-in, which I think they've got a shot. Even if you don't get in, you're playing high-stakes basketball right now. Yeah. You're 71 games into the season. You have 11 games left, and the Rockets are actually playing for something. When was the last time the Rockets had a dozen games or less where they were playing for something? It's been a few years.
Good question.
So this young team is getting to play high-stake basketball. They're getting to have these, you know, these games that are meaningful, that are impactful, and I think that goes a long way in helping a young team. I don't really care what team's record is whenever they're young and they're growing and they're developing. I do care if they're playing high stakes, and this team is playing high stakes basketball, and I think it's going to accelerate the growth that they have as a team. Jalen Green gets a lot of the talk, but this is a total team effort. Like Jalen Green yesterday, it wasn't his best game that he's had in his last dozen or so. Now, he still scored 27 when he had a poor shooting night, which I think is maturation as a scorer and something we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Can he get you 20-25 when he's not shooting well? Well, he did yesterday. It took him 26 shots, but if the Rockets are counting on him to score 20-25 points, you got to figure out a way to get there. You can't have these 9-point games, these 12-point games, when you're the lead scorer. So I like to see Jalen Green have a 27-point game when he didn't shoot all that well. So that was cool to see. But this little stretch that they've been in and the next 11 games where they're playing high-stakes basketball and knock on wood, maybe they can get into the play-in game, I think it accelerates the growth as a team going forward.
There's nothing else to consider but the fact that it's going to accelerate. It's going to give them experience. It's going to give them motivation. It's going to give them an understanding of what kind of effort it's going to take and what kind of execution it's going to take in order to do these kind of things consistently and be where some of the best teams in the league are. It's a great precursor to what's ahead for this squad. And with every passing game, especially against bigger opponents, you're going to find a young team that's getting experience and understanding what it takes to be a winning team in this league. It's valuable whether you make it or not, as you said. And the biggest thing is, you can say that, hey, they're playing great basketball. They're playing the right way. To me, Jalen Green was a tale of two halves that about, say, 15, 20 games ago, he would have mailed it in at halftime and just understood it, just basically would have said, this is one of those nights. It ain't it for me. And you probably wouldn't have seen the 180. The second half 180 was so encouraging to understand that, hey, I still got to keep taking my shots. I still got to keep getting others involved. And I got to do what's necessary for this team. Then on top of all that, Jeremy, when you look at it, you're playing without Alpi. You're playing without Tari Eason. You're playing without Cam Whitmore. You're playing without guys that you're still evaluating, but you think are going to be big pieces of your future going forward. And yet you're still winning game after game after game to be in this position.
People thought I was crazy whenever I said I really like this nucleus. Like, I really like this nucleus. We said that maybe 3-4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Now, they're nowhere near their ceiling. For them, like, I've said that this has a chance of being a championship nucleus, and I still believe that, and I think it's becoming more believable now than it was a month, 2 months, 6 months ago. Because all of the guys, if you're looking like is 100% is the ceiling, Jalen Green is like at a 30. Like right now, he's like at a 60. Alpi Shingun's maybe closer to his ceiling, but is not to his ceiling yet. Amin Thompson, nowhere close to his ceiling. Jabari Smith, nowhere close to his ceiling. Cam Whitmore, nowhere close to his ceiling. Tari Eason, nowhere close to his ceiling. I think that the Rockets, maybe outside of Oklahoma City, have the best collection of young talent to build around. Now, can they all reach their potential and turn into a championship nucleus? Time will tell. Right. I will say that they have the right coach to get the most out of them, and I think you can look at this season as a tell to that. I thought that Alpi Shingun was on a trajectory to be the NBA Most Improved Player of the Year. I credit the coaching staff for that. Jalen Green's probably the NBA's Most Improved Player over the last 2 months. I give compliments to the coaching staff for that. So I'm really excited where this organization's going. I like the roster. I love the coaching staff. And I am very happy that with 11 games left to play in the regular season, this team is playing meaningful, high-stake basketball. And I think it's just great for the evolution of this team.
Here's the other thing, Jeremy. When we were talking about all this, and I think the key word in the nucleus was, is it a championship-caliber nucleus? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it does. I think it absolutely matters.
I don't think it does. Because hear me out. Whether it is right now where it sits currently or not, you with every passing game, you have enough resources, if it's not, to do what you need to do to bump it up a notch if you have to make it better. Because we keep talking about, well, even if you add these draft picks, where are you going to have room for them with all the guys you already got? But if you keep stockpiling talent, similar to, I agree, I think the most talent, young talent in the league is OKC, simply because Presti's just stockpiled draft pick after draft pick. But at a certain point, he found Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. If he wants to go find another veteran, he's got so many young pieces that teams are interested in and so many draft picks as well, he can do something with it. So whether you're championship caliber or not, you have one of the premier rosters for the next 5 years in the league just as it sits now. If you find out a year or two from now when you get to kind of where the Texans are looking at getting to that next level of being like a contending championship caliber team and you need to make something happen, you have enough pieces around your puzzle that you can utilize them to get where you need to go.
Yeah, and this is going to sound very nitpicky, but if you have a championship nucleus, it's easier to make those trades because your value of what you have is better. Like, and if you have better value of what you have in your, you know, arsenal, that makes it easier to make those trades or easier to get that target that you want. So I think the value of what you have on the roster always matters. Like, if you have a championship nucleus, well, it's easier to trade those pieces for pieces that you really want. If it's a non-championship nucleus, now you don't have as much value around the league. So that's kind of where I'm at. That's why, to me, it matters. It always matters the amount of talent that you have on your roster, even if you want to make moves in the future.
But to me, it's like if you're a championship caliber roster, you've got, in today's NBA, you're supposed to have three, but you have two dominant superstar talents in the league, and you have a third one that's close. And even if you don't have that right now, you have so much talent. You can go get one if you need to.
8437, I was not expecting the Rockets to close the gap like they have. I understand that they haven't had the hardest schedule necessary, but Udoka has them playing really good ball right now without Shingun. Look, if you have a really easy schedule now, it's because you've played a pretty hard schedule prior to this. So the Rockets are just trying to take advantage of the pocket of the schedule that opened up for them. If it's easy now, it means that it wasn't easy prior to when the easy schedule started. Like NBA, you play 82 games. They're all going to be pretty darn close to balanced as you can get. This isn't the NFL where you play 17 games and your schedule looks a lot different than somebody else's schedule. This isn't college football where, you know, Alabama plays an SEC schedule and Miami of Ohio plays a MAC schedule. You play 82 games in the NBA, it's going to be pretty darn balanced over the 82 games. So the Rockets, are they taking advantage of the easier part of their schedule? Sure. But that means they already played the hardest part of their schedule. So I don't really put a whole lot of stock on that. Now, the Shingun conversation's interesting to me because I know that we've talked about Jalen without Alpi. We've talked about Jalen with Alpi. I think that there's – I think they can play together. I think they've shown times this year where they can play together. Now, is it easier for Jalen Green to get his without Alpi? You don't have to feed the post. You have a guy that's playing outside of the three-point line instead of in the low post. I think it's a conversation worth having.
Well, I think the bigger conversation is, can Udoka create an offense that can actually appease both of them? Because when you look at the greatest, when you look at the big man combinations, whether it was Wade and Shaq in Miami, Kobe and Shaq in the, with the Lakers, no matter who you pick, when you have a big presence, a big man presence, and you have a wing presence, there are offense, and it doesn't have to be the triangle, but there are offenses that can take advantage of both. You don't have to facilitate. Early in the season, I think they were running everything through Alpi.
Yeah.
Now you have the ability, because of what Jalen's shown you and because of the flexibility as a coaching staff, now it's on the coaching staff to develop an offense that can actually do both, can facilitate Alpi at times, can take advantage of matchups and facilitate with Jalen at times, and not take a step back no matter which one you choose to go to.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for them to coexist in the best possible way is if Alpi can develop a consistent three-point shot. Because I think that Jalen benefits on this five-out offense. You have Jabari that's playing the five. I know he wasn't there yesterday because he was suspended a game. But if your center can play outside of the perimeter, outside of the three-point line, tons of space, and I think Jalen Green is great in space. So I do think that there are benefits to Jalen Green offensively with Alpi Şengün off the floor. Now, how do you marry the two? To me, it's Alpi developing a consistent three-point shot. I think that'll do wonders for this offense going forward. And there is some thoughts that Alpi might be coming back at some point this
season. They said
last
night before the game he was getting shots up. He was working on some things. So was Cam Whitmore. So by the end of the year, you might have two of those pieces that we were talking about being out, being back for you in case you need them down the stretch. That's just another shot in the arm for this team that already has shown they got a real chemistry going on right now, and they've got everybody involved. That would be fantastic.
I would, if Alpi does come back, I'd bring him off the bench. I'm not changing the starting five as you're hot. Sorry.
I honestly am only bringing him back if he's 100%.
Well, of course. Well, but even if he's 100%, no, I'm only going to bring him off the bench.
I wouldn't go, of course, because I think some teams, if they're in it and they got a chance to win, you know, to catch Golden State and actually secure the play, they might go all in to the point where they push him back too soon. He's too valuable for your future to push him push him if he's not 100%, but if he is and he can help you, put him back out there.
I mean, he's a sprained ankle. I don't think him playing on a sprained ankle is going to lead to, like, amputation.
No,
like,
I didn't say that either.
But. He obviously has to be healthy enough to play, but I'm saying if he's cleared and they make the decision to play him, I'm not putting him in the starting lineup unless you're struggling. Like, that's not a move I make unless I start struggling. You continue to win, hey, let's roll with what's we're hot. Alpi, you're going to come off the bench for us for a few games. Sorry, until you know, and it might not even be because of Alpi. It might be because you're just winning games. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Joel's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We're on ESPN as well. We're on YouTube as well. Just search ESPN Houston. We'll get your reaction to the Rockets, 713-780-3776. Also, a couple of questionable headlines that I saw out there. Am I being too curmudgeon-y again? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Joe George hanging out with us too, peeping in, seeing what we're all about, stealing show content. Remember, he did that his first week of the show. There was a Will-A-Bit. What was the Will-A-Bit? Big deal, little deal, no deal? And then it's like show two of the Killer G's, and he's like doing that segment.
Feeling pretty good about himself.
What'd you call him yesterday?
Oh, the
probationary talent.
Yeah.
Probationary talent. 713-780-ESPN.
Call him Lovey if you want, or Cully.
I don't want.
Okay.
No, I don't want. 713-780-3776. We'll get to the headlines. I'm going to throw by you to ask, am I being too much of a curmudgeon? I'll ask you in a second. But yes. 8437, I feel like I've been seeing Van Vliet going 3-for-15 too often this year. At this point, I'd rather see Jalen Green taking those shots instead of Van Vliet, or at least give those shots to someone else, even though Jalen Green wasn't shooting too hot yesterday either. Yeah, I mean, I hear you, texter. but somebody else has to take the shots too. Somebody like Jalen took 26 shots yesterday. Van Vliet took 18. I think that's a good ratio.
I do too, because I think that Van Vliet has really, you have to understand a couple of things. You didn't want James Harden back on this squad, and if you did, we should probably end the conversation there. But Van Vliet, you had to spend the money. You got a guy who Udoka really wanted, who was going to be a coach on the floor and do a lot of things to kind of help the development of young players. And he's capable of making big shots. I was watching. There was a time where they were struggling mightily on offense in the first half, and he took a good amount of his shots right then and there, trying to keep them in the ball game and do some things. Jalen doesn't need more shots than he already takes, because a lot of times he shoots himself back into a rhythm. So I'm fine with the numbers they put up last night, the shots that they took, and I think that you would probably want Fred VanVleet shooting the majority of his shots more so than a lot of guys on this squad, as they're kind of fitting in and getting things squared away too.
I'm not sure how you get to Harden here, because this was a very like
because
this
you had
roster.
To spend the money in free agency,
but
and the big discussion for
right,
the big
but the text
money
didn't
was those
say
two guys.
About the,
no,
the,
but
the,
I'm just saying it was he's the right guy, and obviously everybody's fluid in a situation right now where things are changing with Jalen having the ball more, doing more things. The everything you heard was the alternative to Van Vliet was going to be Harden.
Yeah, but the text specifically
I
talking
that,
about the amount of shots
I'm
that are going
it,
up now.
I'm taking it from the standpoint of Fred's been the right guy. And early on when they were trying to figure stuff out, he had to take that many shots.
But he's talking about now, though. He's not talking about early in the year.
But I don't
or,
have
like,
a problem
player
with what
personnel.
He did last night either, the shots that he took.
Yeah, I don't either. Like, we're kind of on the same. I just don't know why you pulled back to like the offseason when he's
There's
talking about like yesterday's game.
A lot of people right now that I've seen are getting like a little too critical of Fred Van Vliet. I think he's been a good teammate. He's obviously making a boatload of money. He's not complaining. He's just, you know, his role has changed too as these young guys have taken on a bigger role.
Yeah, if he's like 3 for 20, like 20 shots is probably too many. But yeah. I don't have a problem taking 15 shots, even on a cold night. Now, if Alpi was playing, maybe it's a different story. Jabari doesn't get up many shots, so like even Jabari in the lineup doesn't really change that approach either. It sounds like I'm always picking on Kron.com. Maybe it's not so much I'm picking on Kron.com. Maybe I'm picking on their headline writer more than anything. They had a Jalen Green story. You know, Draymond Green, we bumped into the show with it. I don't give a darn about the Rockets. Well, Jalen Green yesterday was asked, hey, are you scoreboard watching? Are you keeping track of the Warriors? You know, trying to see if you get into this play-in spot. Here was Jalen Green after the game.
I'm looking at it every day. I was watching the Warriors last night. You know, we're making a push. You got to go, like I said before, and executing, so you just gotta stay the course.
All right, so the headline on the Kron from this, Kron, not Houston Chronicle, Kron.com, Houston Chronicle, two different entities, owned by the same company, but two different entities. The headline says Jalen Green pokes fun at Draymond Green as playoff race tightens up. I don't think he was poking fun at Draymond Green, do you?
Not at all. He was being honest.
That's some clickbait stuff there from Kron.com. Yeah, he said, I'm scoreboard watching, is what he said.
Look, I think a lot of people went overboard on the Draymond comments, too, because when I first saw them, I was like, well, there's got to be more than this, because everybody just feels like they need to say, you know, all this stuff about what Draymond said. He said one sentence. He doesn't give a damn about the Rockets. So what? Who cares? But from Jalen's perspective, he's giving you the honest feeling of a guy that's part of a team that's a half game behind the team that with full of veterans that's won championships that they want to catch. And it's like scoreboard watching in baseball. If you admit that you're scoreboard watching, that's great. You know what that means? You're competitive. You want to win.
I have no idea where Jalen Green could possibly be poking fun at Draymond Green here. Do you see this at all, Brian?
No, no.
Like, is he poking fun at him at all?
I'm 100% with you guys. That was absolutely baiting for clicks. There's no way you could take the tone that Jalen Green said, the words that he used, and come to the conclusion that he was making fun of Draymond Green. He was asked a question like, hey, are you tracking the standings? Which, why wouldn't he be? Because they're now a half game back at the Warriors. And he's like, yeah, I watched the Warriors last night.
Look,
how could that ever be construed as a shot at Draymond?
The thumbnail to click on the story says Jalen Green throws shades at Warriors as Rockets eye, and then it says dot, dot, dot. And then if you click the actual story, it says Jalen Green pokes fun at Draymond Green as playoff race tightens. No way is he sending a shot to Draymond Green at all.
That is the author putting...
He's answered a question.
Well,
it's that simple.
Jalen was answering a question. The author is trying to put in context where context was not actually there.
No.
Right.
Like, what is going on at the Kron? Kron, again, Cron.com and Houston Chronicle are very different entities. I feel like I'm being sent a cease and desist. I have not been threatened. I have not been given a cease and desist to make it very clear that Cron and Houston Chronicle are two. And I like some of the people at the Cron. I've met some people at the Cron. They do fantastic work. I'm not even sure the author of this story.
Are you literally telling me that they're not owned by the same company?
They're owned by the same company, but they're run by two totally different people. Like, the newsrooms aren't even together. Huh. Houston Chronicle and Cron.com do not coexist.
So you'll never see the same columnist from Houston Chronicle.
Well, sometimes they will. Like, I've seen Houston Chronicle use a Cron columnist to write for the Houston Chronicle. So I think that they're like their top fill-ins or their top, like, hey, we have another story. Hey, will you go freelance for us here? Mm-hmm. But they're employed by Cron.com. Like, this author was Michael Shapiro. I don't know if Michael Shapiro is actually, like, I don't know if he's writing the headlines. I have no idea. So I'm not poking fun at him. Yeah. I don't think that he's the one that I'm throwing my ire towards. But to say that Jalen Green pokes fun at Draymond Green as playoff race Titans is literally inventing things.
It really is. The only way that that happens is if you get some player that, you know, unprovoked sits at their locker and says, unlike others, I'm watching the team that we're chasing every night. I'm watching the Warriors every night. Then there was no question that he was directly answering. There was no – then you can try and put those two and two together and at least have some kind of basis. There's no basis for this. He just answered a question that was asked to him in a post-game scrum.
Yeah, I don't think there's – am I crazy here? 713-780-3776, or is this some clickbait and stuff? I want to start doing that, just be the maverick against all these people that do all this clickbaiting stuff. I don't like it. I don't like people that engagement farm whatsoever. Here was another one that I question the headline here a little bit. This is from MLB.com. It's from Brian McTaggart, Go Cougs. They had to do, I'm sure Major League Baseball forced them to do this, their you know, editor or whatever. The most important thing we've learned from each team this season. For the Houston Astros, the most important thing that they've learned this season, Joe Espada is the right man for the job. Is it too early?
Yeah.
He's literally not managed one Major League Baseball game in his life. How do we know he's the right man for the job?
We don't.
After spring training.
I mean, you think about this, and the first thing I think about is, do you think Denver media put out Nathaniel Hackett's the right man for the job before he coached the game with the Broncos? I mean,
man, you're
throwing some
shade.
I'm sure we can find it on Old Taste Exposed.
Look, and I think that Joe Espada is the most interesting manager in the world, but he's not managed a single game.
That's what I'm saying. My point being, whether you got a new coach, great, but you can't pass judgment on a new coach until, well, look, we've seen Culley, we've seen Lovey. You have to wait and see how it plays out. I'm pulling for Joe Espada. I think he's a smart baseball guy. I think he's been around this team and in this organization long enough. He's going to do a great job. But at the same time, how do you know he's the right man for the job right now when he's never managed a Major League Baseball game before? I mean, except for filling in for Dusty if he gets tossed.
Look, I think it was a good hire, and I think that he's going to be good. But in no way can you say right now that he's the right man for the job. Like, if they go 81-81 and miss the playoffs and then never make the postseason again, and the golden era is dead, we're going to look back at this headline and be, ooh, boy.
Doesn't this just come off as someone who didn't like Dusty's style of managing and see something like Yordan batting second? Like, oh, Joe Spada, right man for the job. Like, they're jumping to declare it because they like his style, or maybe sticking to the analytics more than Dusty did, and they're just jumping to conclusions.
Yeah, I don't think McTaggart was that guy, though. Like, he was fair to Dusty. Like, he was never critical of Dusty.
You think McTaggart wrote his own headline, though?
Well, if you read the little, like, one thing you've learned, McTaggart, it does have his tagline under it. It said, Espada bided his time under a pair of World Series winning managers in Houston. Hinch and Baker finally gets his shot after serving his bench coach. So, it's about Espada.
Okay. All right. That's fair, then.
Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe not.
I don't know. It's certainly a jump to conclusion, if nothing else. Best case scenario.
You can't say that yet.
Yeah,
I like the hire.
There's
like
no
the
basis.
Hire.
There's no basis to make that assumption. I mean, you can present it as you're giving a take.
Uh-huh.
That'd be fine. We could go on like, hell, we have cash in the trash at 4:30. We can make that take. But if you're presenting it as a fact, then that changes everything.
Because how he handled spring training. Like, you could say it about D'Amico. You can say
right.
it about emails.
Yeah.
Say it about Espada.
Yeah, I mean,
it's too early.
There's no basis to be able to make that judgment yet. I mean, everybody thinks he's the right guy for the job, but until he's managed some Major League Baseball games for the team that he's going to be given credit for being the right man for that team, we don't know what we don't know.
So I'm not that curmudgeon-y here?
No. And honestly, I don't.
But you're on a mission with headlines, though.
I'm going to start. I'm
Are
going
you the headline
to be.
Critic?
I'm going to be the roadblock for clickbait. That's what I'm going to do. Because I'm tired of clickbait,
Jeremy,
so I'm going to be the roadblock. And the Justice Maverick for clickbait. Just get this out of our fair city.
Critic.
Jeremy's Headliners. Yeah. So all you need to do is just do a segment called Jeremy's Headliners.
It just bothers me. Like, it bothers me when
Maybe
I see this stuff.
Because
you're
bits.
Like, Like, it's creating this. It's like you're literally creating a narrative for Jalen Green. Jalen Green said he's paying attention to the standings. He's not taking a shot at Draymond Green.
But you know, between Skip Bayless, who is the master of it and wants everybody to hate him and lash out at his stupid takes, to Colin Cowherd, this is what these guys live for these days.
Oh, absolutely.
It's become 80% clickbait media in the, maybe not 80%, but the right. Media has become more than 50% clickbait. We see Yahoo Sports every single day with a headline. Like, if they sent someone down from the Astros, that's just one of the last guys. If they sent Cabbage down, mm-hmm. suddenly Astros send down possible key player in major move before they break camp. You click on it, you want to know who it is, and then you go, it was Cabbage?
Well, I get why it's done. Like, that's how you get eyes, that's how you get money, that's how you survive. Sure. Like, I get the game, I understand the game. I kind of, in a way, do it with my Twitter, but it's more of a satire than anything else, to be completely honest. Like, I joke around that I engagement farm. Do I actually care for engagement? No, I don't. I'm kind of ridiculing it. It's kind of a spoof more than anything else. But I'm going to call it out when I see it because bothers me. And it's not just sports. You see it everywhere. Like, well, this happened here. And as you're like, actually do a little bit of digging on it. No, this headline is totally off base. It's not real.
If you see the credible outlets, they don't need to do this because people are still going there every day to get updates on their favorite teams, to understand that they have a staff covering that team and that's what they want. They want the true information. But when you see a true information source resorting to things like this with headlines, it's kind of sad. Because it never used to be that way.
That's why I'm going to start calling it out. A roadblock for clickbait. The Killer Bees. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. You know that opening day is Thursday? Thursday at 6:05. First pitch, by the way. Yes, we know it starts at 3. But it really starts at 6:05. The offseason is done. Astros are playing like exhibition games against the Space Cowboys. And they're losing games to the Space Cowboys because the batter's eye was not changed. What was your final Astros offseason grade? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. We are the Beast. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. What is your offseason grade for the Astros? They play a real game on Thursday. Open up a four-game series against the Yankees. 6:05 first pitch. The bid is back. What is your offseason grade for the Stros now that we're here? Like, opening day is here. Final exhibition game today. Off day tomorrow. Opening day Thursday afternoon. What is your offseason grade?
I think for me it's a solid B. I think that they could have updated they could have upgraded the bullpen a little bit more. They could have brought in another bat. But what they did in bringing in a massive free agent that I didn't expect in a guy like Hader, getting a backup catcher that has experience, that can do a lot, that has some versatility at the plate for you, I'm totally fine with what they did. I think that they did more than enough, more than I expected them to do, especially with the way the free agency started. So I'll give them a B.
Yeah, I think B's a fair grade. The Athletic posted an offseason grade for every single team around Major League Baseball. They gave the Astros a B as well. I think where they hit here, I actually like what they did with, and one of their check marks was catcher. I like what they did with catcher because I think Victor Caratini, let's say Yainer Diaz, not that we are thinking this is to be the case, but let's say the Yainer Diaz can't handle the load defensively. I don't think that's going to be the case. But if he can't, Caratini's a capable starter in Major League Baseball. Maybe he gets dinged up and all he can do is DH for you. I don't love that because that means Jordan Alvarez is going to play some games in the outfield, which terrifies me. Caratini is a more than capable starting catcher. And for you to sign him as your backup guy, and backup catchers play quite a bit, I think was one of their, like, the underrated move to me that I like that certainly helps out their bench. Like, Caratini's better than Martin Maldonado. So I like that aspect of it. Obviously, the biggest star you got was Josh Hader. Hader elevates the bullpen. But why I don't give it like an A as opposed to a B is because your bullpen was already very good last year. Like, the overall regular season, you had Hector Neris, who was fantastic. Phil Maton was solid. Ryan Stanek was pretty good. After 2 years ago, had the lowest ERA in all of Houston Astro history for a reliever. So you kind of added a strength to what was already a strength last year, and you also have some holes in the middle relief unless some of these young guys can step up. Offensively, you didn't really add a starter. While I like the move of Caratini, that's it. Like, what's your next best offensive acquisition? The guys that you're, you know, upgrading to a starter, like you think that Yiner Diaz is going to be an upgrade. You hope that Jake Myers is an upgrade over Jake Myers and Corey Jolks from last season. But other than that, like, their key addition for the Astros with the next batch, Trey Cabbage. And Trey Cabbage isn't even breaking
the spring.
Yeah. Isn't even breaking spring training on the squad. I felt like they could have used another left-handed bat. I don't think the bench is great. So I think it's an okay offseason. Obviously, the Hader move saves it, because if you don't get Hader, it's like it's an F. You had a terrible offseason. Hader's what brings it up to a Absolutely. Solid B. But there's a lot of other things that I wish the Astros would have done, and it's why I'm not going to give it an A.
I think I would go a little bit higher than a B, and maybe this is creating an extra grade just to say I gave a grade.
You can work for con.com.
But I'm going to go with A-, just because, look, while I hear you, you know, left-handed bat, maybe middle relief, there certainly were some places where they could have added to. I just don't know how realistic those were. Unless you're willing to go to a place with the Astros, you know, salary and where they spend and the luxury tax that they've never gone before, and I just don't think that was a reasonable ask, then the Astros weren't going to add this massive bat, left-handed bat, or another bullpen arm, or another starting pitcher to alleviate some of the concerns about the depth in the starting rotation. That would have been someone that would have cracked the starting lineup mm-hmm. that made the difference that we were talking about and give them an A+. So I just don't see it as all that realistic. And
why couldn't you add a $5 million left-handed bat to have on your bench instead of John Singleton?
Who's the name? Who out there signed for $5 million that the Astros should have signed?
I don't know.
That's kind of the problem. It's kind of what we talked about with some of the NFL free agency moves. Like, well, we like to say, you know, cut Robert Woods and use that $5 million on a wide receiver, but all the wide receivers are going for well beyond that. So. I will push back a little bit on the Josh Hader thing. I know you strengthened the strength, but I don't think I looked at the Astros bullpen last year, and certainly some of the guys in the middle of relief had some moments, but I didn't really feel comfortable about what they were throwing out there. Like, okay, they're going to go lock it down until you got to the eighth inning, until you got to Abreu Presley. So now by adding Hader, you've lengthened out that amount of time where you feel like you put in the bullpen and the game's over.
But isn't that why you get that? In my opinion, that's part of the reason why I gave him a B, because if they didn't go out and replace the volume you lost in the three relievers that you lost, you shorten the game on the back end by adding another lockdown closer so that you have those last three innings covered better, so that you one way or another, you still obviously need some arms. But this way, at least, you know you've shortened the game no matter who is trying to fill it. And you assume your starters can get you into at least the fifth. And when they can't, then, yeah, maybe it's one of those nights. But overall, there's a couple different ways you can strengthen the bullpen. They tried a different approach to it. I still think they were lacking at least one more arm. But at the same time, I don't fault them for Hader.
I think it's a playoff move. 8736, can you call it a strength, though, if you lost all three bullpen guys you mentioned in the postseason? Yeah, because one guy's greater than two whenever you're talking about postseason baseball. Now, over the course of 162, what helped you more? Probably the two or the three versus the one. But it's a move geared for the postseason because the Astros have postseason aspirations.
Can you call it a postseason and bigger picture move, too, because Presley's in the last year of his deal? So therefore, you know, if you're going to lose,
he might not be. He's got the vesting option.
But even one, maybe two, but you know that Hader for five
two.
Means that even if you lose Presley, you've got a closer built right in with Abreu to where your 8 and 9 are still covered.
Yeah, there's
that, but I think you also have to remember, whether it be some of these injured pitchers coming back or a call up for Spencer Arrighetti, there could be names in the bullpen by the time we get to September and October that we're not talking about right now, and suddenly that fifth inning roll that, oh crap, our starter only went four innings and now you got to bridge a couple innings. That concern that we have now isn't the same when we get to September and October.
Yeah, and I mean you can pick up relievers too at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean the deadline hasn't passed yet. I mean you still have
The Astros have seemingly always added a decent middle reliever at the trade deadline.
There's time to make another move if you feel like, look, maybe we did take this too lightly and maybe we do need another arm.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of arguing for him, though. Like, you're arguing for Brian. Brian gave it a better grade than we did. A couple of the names that I would throw out. Go ahead.
I feel very, very good about the
Hater. Welcome over to my side, Joel.
Yeah. I feel really good about the Hader addition. But if that wasn't enough, they can still make another move to make the middle of the bullpen better, or they could even find another bat if they need to before the deadline. But that's why I think that they did more than enough to get a B.
I will say that the areas that they didn't add, like I would like another arm or two just because I like excess, right? Like I would love to just fill every hole, even though that's probably not realistic. Pause.
Clip that.
You can find middle relievers pretty cheap at the deadline. Rental reliever, you can find that pretty cheap. A left-handed fourth outfielder, you can find pretty cheap at the deadline. So the areas that I have concerns about, I do admit that if you need them and there's still concerns come July, that those are the easiest ones to find.
It feels a little bit sometimes like when we complain about the needs they didn't fill, this is almost Madden roster building. Like,
yeah, what, for sure.
I mean, maybe outside the Dodgers because they have more money than God. Like, what team is running out of a roster, a 26-man roster with zero
holes? I don't like that argument because I'm the Astros and I'm trying to win a World Series. I don't want to compare myself to the Florida Marlins and the Kansas City Royals. I want to build a roster that's going to win a World Series. And where I think that this team could be strengthened is its bench. I'm like, I'm even okay-ish with Jake Meyers getting a crack at being your everyday center fielder. But I wish there's an option in case that fails. What are your options if Jake Meyers is not an everyday center fielder? Either you're playing Yordan in left. I do not want that. Trey Cabbage, no. Jacob Melton had an awful spring, no. Corey Joltz is in a starting outfielder. So, like, that's where I come into – like, that's where my mindset's at. I want a deep bench with some plan Bs. And you mentioned a couple of those, like, if you're giving me $5 million to add one more bat that I would have liked in going off of guys who actually signed contracts, a couple of righties that I like – I'll get you one lefty in a second. But a couple of righties that I would have liked Adam Duvall on this team. He signed for $3 million $3 million for 1 year. Would I rather have Adam Duvall or John Singleton? Give me Adam Duvall. Mm-hmm. Kiki Hernandez, $4 million. He's a righty, but I'd rather have him than John Singleton. How about Joey Gallo? And I know Joey Gallo is going to hit .190 and strike out 300 times.
So will Duvall.
But are they better than John Singleton?
Yeah, I mean, well, I feel like we could say that about everyone in the league.
Sure. So,
I mean,
well, that's my point, though. It's like that you're carrying that guy, though. So we can say everybody in the league's better, but you're carrying the guy that everybody in the league's better.
Yeah, the only reason why I look at this, too, is kind of what you were – to your point you're saying about, hey, this is a championship-caliber team. Absolutely. And to Jeremy, your point, we've been on the same page on this. I would have added at least one more arm, too, because if I got a championship-caliber team, I need guys with experience. I don't want guys that I'm bringing up from the minor leagues thinking maybe there's a chance this guy could be a middle reliever for us or fill a role for us. I need a guy that is very familiar with filling that kind of a role, has pitched out of the bullpen before, has major league experience, so that I am as buttoned up as I can be as a championship caliber team. If I'm a middle of the road team, or I'm trying to build for the future, then I'm okay bringing up young arms and trying to experiment. With this team, I would have liked another arm because I think if you are a World Series team, experience matters.
And I will say this to defend Crane, and he kind of talks out of both sides of my mouth a little bit. I can understand not signing Michael Lorenzen and having to pay a luxury tax on Michael Lorenzen. Like, he's not that big enough a game changer where you're like, okay, we must have him. You can wait a couple of months to see how it's going. Like, I get it. I would like a stronger bench. It's not my money. 5847B, because they could have made this lineup a next level with a bigger outfielder. Pushing Pena to the nine hole makes this lineup the elite of Major League Baseball. That's from Eric. I mean, that could still happen without a free agent acquisition. Like, if Jake, and again, it's a big if, right, when you're talking Jake Meyers. But if Meyers can hit .270 and, like, have a little bit of power, hit 15 to 20 home runs, that's amazing production from your 8-9 spot.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Look, I don't think that they're in a position where they failed. I don't think that they're in a position going into the regular season that I worry about a whole lot or I doubt a whole lot. My biggest thing is you're in a position where you could have gotten better this offseason by maybe doing a little bit more in free agency. But that doesn't mean that the window is completely shut on the fact that if you find out whether it's Jake Meyers, the bullpen, or another bat off the bench, injuries, you can still upgrade.
Look, we're wanting more. Like, we're hoping for luxuries. They're not necessities. I still think the Astros can win a World Series with the roster they currently have. But I can understand Crane's side of it, too. I don't want to spend $5 million and then pay a 20% tax on a Joey Gallo. Like, why? Like, does it really upgrade you enough to where you're paying $5 million plus the tax? No, not really. Michael Lorenzen's an arm that I would have liked to had if I had Monopoly money. But if I'm Jim Crane, am I going to sign? What did Lorenzen get? $5 million? $6 million? I don't even remember what he got. But he got $5 million and then you're taxing them 20% on top of that?
Yeah.
Does that upgrade you enough where you want to spend $5 million plus the tax? No, it's not. So, like, I get his point of view. But me, the one that's not spending the money, hey, strengthen the bench. So, like, I get both sides of it. 713-780-ESPN. What is your offseason grade for the Stros? 713-780-3776. There was predictions in The Athletic today about Major League Baseball, and two of them pertain to the Houston Astros. What were those predictions? Would you take those predictions, and do you think they will happen? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We're the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We'll get to the predictions. Would you take these two predictions in a moment? Somebody texted Charlie Blackman. I think Charlie Blackman's still free. At least it is according to Spotrac, but you can never trust those guys. He played 96 games last year, 803 OPS. He doesn't play center anymore. He's really not good defensively at all anymore, but hey, a bench option, maybe. I want a guy who can play a little bit of defense, so I don't love that option, but I would concede that it is an upgrade over at least one, maybe two of the guys that you're going to carry on opening day. Someone else, Nathan Seabrook, not sure why you were hating on Yordan playing left field so much. I've never seen him commit an error, and he's got a great arm. This has nothing to do with Yordan defensively, and I understand that sounds weird because I'm saying I don't want to see him play defense. It has everything to do with his proneness for injury. I agree with you. Yordan's fine in left field. He's probably a little bit below average to average as a defensive left fielder, but he's capable. Like, he's got pretty good speed, especially for a big man. He does have a cannon for an arm. That's his best defensive attribute. But this has everything to do about his offense. He is not a good enough outfielder to where you're like, we have to get him out there, because now you're jeopardizing how many games he plays, period. He has shown that over the course of his career that he is prone to injury. He is such a good hitter that I want to limit the chances he has to getting injured. So that's why I never want to see Yordan play left field. If Yordan never played the field again in his life and was only a designated hitter for the rest of his life, I would be perfectly okay with that. And I'm not saying that Yordan's a bad defender. I just love him so much offensively that I don't want to risk the chances of him getting hurt by playing an average at best left field.
Yeah, I think that was the key that when we always had the Yordan rules and everything else. The main thing is the fact that you saw that slip on the ice patch that he did with his back to home plate last year that made everybody hold their breath and go, oh, please, Lord, don't let anything serious happen on the way that he went down. As the main crux for why you don't want to see him in the outfield, and I'm not trying to speak for you, but we've had the discussion, as much as I think a lot of regular Astros fans would love to say, hey, it doesn't matter where he plays, just put him out there. If he wants to play left field, let him play left field, because he's got a bat. Well, that bat doesn't translate to, if you're hurt, you can't play. You and I made the friendly bet. I want 51 games out of him, but I understand not playing him there regularly.
I think that's more because you predicted that. I don't think you want to see him play 51 games.
Like, no, if we didn't have the bet.
Yeah. Like, if you were managing the club, you would limit the exposure of Yordan Alvarez in left field. You're rooting for 51 because we made the bet.
Yeah,
you're predicting what they're going
to
do.
There's a reason why David Ortiz became the regular DH for the Boston Red Sox. His bat was way too valuable to lose. To where if you didn't have a spot to him for to play defense, so what? Yeah,
there's a difference between predicting what's going to happen right, and then saying what you would do. Because I predict that he's going to play left field far more than I want him to. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference there. Jim Bowden of The Athletic today, he had some predictions about what's going to happen in the Major League season. There was like 24 or so. But he had two that pertain to the Houston Astros. First off, would you take this prediction? And then secondly, do you believe it's going to happen? The first one was, he predicts the Astros to make the World Series but lose to the Atlanta Braves. If I could tell you right now, Blankers, that you could have the Astros in the World Series but they're going to lose to Atlanta, would you take option A, or would you take option B of the complete unknown? You have no idea what's going to happen.
I'm going to take the complete unknown, because this team's already done so much that they've already etched their names in history in terms of what this team is. And if you make another run to another World Series, regardless of whether you win it or not, it just continues to build the legacy. But I firmly believe this team is capable of winning another World Series.
Yeah.
And then you solidify even more and you put yourself a little bit higher up on the notches of great teams of all time. So I'll roll the dice, and I'll keep riding with this team.
I will, too. For the Astros, for me, and if they fall short and they don't win the World Series, I'm not calling the season a bust. I'm not calling the season a failure. But you're championship hunting with the Houston Astros. So if I'm not winning the championship and I could lock that in, sorry, I'm not doing that. I think this team's capable of winning it all, so I'll take option B, the complete unknown. If it were the Texans and the Rockets, though, I might go the opposite way because I don't really think that the Texans or the Rockets are championship-worthy just yet. But if you told me I could lock in an appearance in the championship, Super Bowl, or the NBA Finals, I think I would do it with those two teams. But I'm not doing it with the Astros, who are hunting titles.
And that last reason is exactly why I would also take the unknown, because this is an opinion you'd give about the Astros in 2017 prior to the season start. You say this about teams that are just, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years away, that are, you think they're good, they're future contenders, but you don't think they can actually win the title yet. But for a team that's been to, what, 4 World Series and won 2 of them, why would you ever just sign up for second place?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
It doesn't make any sense.
I think that we would all agree to that. Is there anybody else that's in the Hive, 713-780-3776, where you could lock in a World Series appearance now, but you're losing to the Braves? No one's taking that option, right?
They shouldn't.
Are you going to wear the ALCS champion T-shirt 10 years from now?
Would you do it if it was the Rockets or Texans? You could lock it in. NBA Finals. NBA, I would.
I would, too.
I'd lock it in.
I think for the Texans, for sure. Because, they're already way above the curve for where we thought they were going to be and how long the time it was going to take to get to where they were going to be really competitive. You tell me at the end of next season they made the Super Bowl but they didn't win it? Fantastic, because you know what? The window's wide open, and there's still plenty of years left with the team you got.
6-5-3-9, they're not even going to make it to another World Series if they can't score runs. I'm talking about them losing to a minor league team yesterday. It's baseball. It does not matter. It's spring training. It's an extension of the spring training. It's not even regular season baseball yet. The second prediction, the Astros, despite their reluctance to give a player a 10-year contract, make an exception for Kyle Tucker, signing him to a deal that resembles the 10-year, $212 million contract the Braves inked Austin Riley to in 2022. Do you think that'll happen?
I don't. I just don't. I don't think Tucker's camp's going to relent and come back and say, you know, we're going to take less and we're going to take a lesser deal. I think they want to test the market. I think they believe that he's been, not that he's been a secret, but I think that he has been underpublicized compared to a lot of guys with similar stats. And I think that he believes that there is a bigger payday out there. Whether the Astros want to match it or not, I think they want to test the market and see how valuable he truly is.
$21 million feels light. Now, he said one that looks like it, not exactly it. 21 feels light. Like, they signed Austin Riley whenever he was further away from free agency. Tucker's pretty darn close to free agency now. He's already tasted arbitration twice. This year and next year is it for Kyle Tucker. I think on both sides this one is not true. I'm with you. I don't think Kyle Tucker would settle for $21 million. I think he's going to be looking for closer to $30 million, and he's closer to free agency than Riley was, so it wouldn't have the similar parameters of that one. And then secondly, I don't think Jim Crane's going to budge off of what he believes. He doesn't believe in signing these huge long-term deals. What gives you any sort of belief that Jim Crane's going to budge off of that now? I haven't seen one thing where Jim Crane has given me any indication of him signing a 10-year contract to anybody, unless he's like 23, 24 years old, and Tucker's closer to 30 than he is 20.
But with the AAV being basically $21 million per year, isn't that enough of a savings to get you to overlook the years?
I don't think that Jim Crane cares about AAV. Jim Crane has been willing to go above AAV for a lot of players. Abreu, maybe. Montero, certainly. Hader.
Hater,
probably.
Yeah.
To me, he doesn't want to get locked into these long-term deals and have a player in the second to third year of a 7, 8, 9 year deal all of a sudden turn into Josh Hamilton or Miguel Cabrera, mm-hmm. and then the rest of his contract is the worst contract in all of baseball. I think that's what he fears more than anything else. He doesn't fear spending money.
He
fears these long-term deals being bad deals.
He also likes the big money on the big, splashy, almost certified guaranteed guy and for the shorter term. But the last thing that this team has showed you over and over again, the one thing they're not going to do is get stuck on a poor return on investment deal like Pujols, like Josh Hamilton, like Miggy. They don't want to do those deals. And if they did, they would have done it with at least one or two of the guys that they watched walk out the door.
But the problem with that thinking, though, and comparing it to guys like Miggy and Pujols and these bloated contracts that you regret in year 8, is with the AAV, that's where the AAV does matter. Like, if you get to the year
don't believe the AAV, though. Like I said, he's going to get closer to 30 than $20 million a year.
No, I'm with you there. I don't think there's any chance Kyle Tucker would take this, so it's all kind of a moot point. But if he were willing to take it, by the time you get deep into the contract being at the point where you would regret it, that annual value is so low that it almost wouldn't matter if his production dropped off.
I mean, you're going off the 212, which I think is silly. Like, that's a silly number. He's not going to make $21 million a year.
Again,
like,
moot point. He's not going to take this deal.
Tucker's probably going to get 20. What's Tucker's arbitration now this year? Like, it's probably 15-ish, maybe?
Yeah,
12 to 15-ish?
Right. We can find it.
His final year of arbitration, he's probably going to get $20 million. So why would he take $9 million? He's getting $12 million this year, BMAC. So I bet you next year he gets somewhere between $15, $17
million. That feels right.
So why would he sign a $21 million contract when he's going to get $15 to $17 million in a final year of arbitration, and then when he enters free agency, he's going to get at least $30 a year?
Unless he craps the bed, he's going to make a massive payday when he gets out on the market.
And I understand that you're using the number that Bowden gave, which Bowden gave a bad number. He's looking more at Riley, and I don't think he really understood when Riley signed his deal versus where Kyle Tucker's at right now. And one other note, like with all these big bloated contracts, and then they turn out to be awful contracts, they're not bad players when they sign the contract. There's a reason they got the contract, because they were good at the time they signed it. And then they start to stink by the time they turn into their mid-30s and then certainly into their late-30s.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Look, I just think that I actually respect what the Astros have done. If you look back at the way they've handled their business in the majority of these situations, they've all worked out in their favor. When you look at the guys that they passed on or just elected not to re-sign, and no matter what they got and where they went, you just don't know. Like Cole right now, we don't know what his situation is. And obviously, he's pitched his tail off with the Yankees, but he wanted to be a Yankee. You knew he was going to leave. But to the other guys, the Correas, the Springers, the guys like that, it's a tough thing to have to walk away from someone that's meant so much to your franchise. But when you look at to the point you always make, we're not paying these guys for what they've done. You're paying them for what they're going to do going forward when you give them this big contract. They haven't earned that. I mean, they haven't lived up to it.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's time now for the Killer Bee Fight Club bracket. What were the results yesterday? Who's surviving and advancing? And who is on tap to fight today? Three more fights in the Killer Bee Fight Club tournament coming up next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. This is basketball season. We know that. You got the tournament going on. You're down to the stretch drive in the pro ranks to try to get into the postseason. It's a fun time to be a basketball fan right now. Sweet 16. You got some teams trying to get into the postseason in the pro ranks, as we mentioned. And you're jonesing for a little bit of hoops. You want to go up to the driveway and shoot some hoops. Well, the way to do that is with a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. Because they make the highest quality basketball goals you will ever find. They're unlike anything else you'll see in the big box stores. Pro Dunk has tempered glass backboards, give you the true, real, authentic feel with the games that you watch on TV. Breakaway rim, which is perfect for dunking, hanging, keeping you safe. Also, they're height adjustable, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. Their new goal, Thor, by the way, you can raise and lower goals with the drill. That's all you got to do. A lightning adjust feature, they call it, and you can raise it all the way up to 10 feet, anywhere to 5 feet. You can do it in a matter of seconds. Get Thor. Make it easy to lower and bring those goals up to 10 feet. Also, their accessories are next level. LED night kits, LED light kits for night play. You might only have time to shoot at night. We'll get an LED light kit so you can play at night. Backstop nets, pull pad lettering, lots more. And you can order everything, including professional installation online. That's correct. The goals at Pro Dunk Hoops will professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't lift a finger. Let the pros at Pro Dunk do all of the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822. It's 281-351-9822. And visit produnk.com. It's produnk.com.